Last week we briefly dealt with an extraordinary Upanishadic episode where a husband teaches his wife, which is not very common and not very often welcomed. And what is even more interesting, he takes up the concept of love itself and gives it a new meaning. The question being, why do you love me? Not because I am I, you are you, but you and I are one at a certain dimension. Not only you and I, the whole world, the entire universe is knit together in a fundamental reality. It is that is reflected in the mind as attraction, as love. Yajnavalkya was one who did not deny anything but sublimated everything. Because if you don't do that, you merely throw one stupid thing away and pick up another stupid thing. You throw one concept away and pick up another concept. His revelation, unique revelation, was you cannot describe something which is the subject, which is indescribable. The subject cannot describe itself, because while attempting to describe itself, the subject has perforce to become an object. Only an object of your consciousness can be described. The subject not being the object, it cannot describe itself. And what is described can at best be a shadow or a reflection, not the truth. If you stand in front of a mirror and describe what you see, you are describing only a small part of the reality. For a simple reason, you don't see your back. And if you have some kind of a mirror arrangement by which your back also is seen, still the sides are not seen, your foot is not seen, your top is not seen. There is no way in which the subject or the self can see itself as an object completely and thoroughly. And so he said, his approach was, neti neti, don't try to juggle with these things. You can definitely arrive at this clear understanding that this is not the self, right? Leave it alone. This is not the subject. The microphone is not the self. In the same way, the body is not the self. Etc., etc., keep going. When you have thus eliminated all that is not self, what are you left with? Yourself. But that has to be very rigorously pursued and practiced. There is another Upanishad and another episode where the teaching is given in one part of it and elicited in another part of it. Very interesting. This is the Taittiriya Upanishad. Before we even get into the discussion, it might be good to reflect on a basic defect in the philosophical study of the Upanishads. Though the word philosophy means wisdom, unfortunately, it has strayed away from that status. Now it has come to mean profound thinking, logical thinking, rationalization, rational thinking, reasoning. And when the mind is applied to this, the truth, the reality, the revelation, the mind immediately wants to grab it, package it nicely, put a label on it. We seem to be dissatisfied unless a label is put on something. That is reason. We want to discover the truth, and even if you discover the truth, immediately you stick another label on it. As soon as the thing is uncovered, you cover it up again. This is the nature of the human mind, unfortunately. So that even when it comes to these Upanishadic revelations, the human mind wants to categorize them, pigeonhole them. I suppose you want to have everything neatly laid out, logically, in logical sequence. And we are fond of using symbols, words are symbols. And we want that one symbol must refer to one thing. So that, I have heard this argument used, anyone living anywhere in the world would immediately recognize what is meant as soon as that symbol is seen. Traffic signals, for instance. They are used universally. So that the moment one sees the symbol, one recognizes what it means. This is another interesting fashion that we have developed, which is all right when it comes to traffic signals, but not in connection with the Upanishadic revelations. There it doesn't apply. There the same symbols are daily. Why? The symbols arouse the mind. Feed mind, feed thought, compel thought to function. Whereas here, we are looking for discovery. First, we have the revelation of, the personal revelation of a sage. he has had some deep insight concerning the reality, concerning truth. And he gives expression to that experience. Obviously, the experience cannot be put into words, but he does his best by using some symbols. If you and I have to be exposed to this teaching or to this revelation, we should pursue this, the course adopted by the Master, and arrive at the truth as he arrived at it, without taking for granted that this means that. I'll explain to you as we go on. The Master was obviously in deep meditation, and he was concerned, perhaps, which is not mentioned, with the universal problem. How have I come into being? What happens to me when I die? And what is it that exists in between? Who am I? Who am I? Where did I come from? And where do I go to? These are simple, universal problems which arise in the hearts of everyone sometime or the other. This holy man perhaps went into deep merit contemplation over these questions. And realized one after the other, or one before the other, that the whole thing exists in space. Whatever is born in space. So space is the creator. But if there was no intelligence, consciousness or Atma, nobody would be aware of space. It is when one becomes aware that space is born. It is thought that creates space. It is awareness that creates space. It is consciousness that creates space. So that must be the first. Tasmatva yetasmat atmana akasha sambhutaha. So you say, aha, from self, from consciousness, space is there. Akashat vayuhu. When there is some movement in space, that is what you call wind, air. Ah, that's good. Correct. Vayo ragnihi. When air moves, there is friction. And the friction generates heat. Agne rapaha. When I get hot, I perspire. This was their simple approach. And the modern scientific approach also is the same. When you mix two gases, there is a spark of fire and water. But their approach is quite simple. When it is very hot, you begin to perspire. Who was the father of your perspiration? the heat. Agnerapaha adhyat prithivi. One can say that when water solidifies, earth is formed, or perhaps if you are flying towards the earth in a satellite, supposing you come from some other place, Mars, Venus or something like that, you look from there, hey, water, water, water everywhere, and here and there that water has given rise to land. Why? Because if you see only a few little islands here and there, floating on this water, so you feel that earth has come out of this water, sensibly. Adhyat prithivi, prithivya oshadaya. And then earth is formed, from this earth plants grow. Oshadhi jyonam, and I eat, and from the herbs, food is produced. Annat purushaha, oh, and eating food, I have come into being. The body, the human body has come into being. That seems to be quite simple. There is no complication here at all here. You are not trying to bamboozle the mind, but training it gently to glide into the truth, slip into the truth. So, there is what may be regarded as a scientific approach from the external reality, gradually coming closer and closer to yourself. You examine space, you examine the gases, the air, you examine fire, water, all the components of this earth, and then gently come back to yourself. So I am made of food. Correct. Annadvai praja prajayante. Because of this food I am able to, I am born. Quite simple. If your father and mother had never eaten food, you would not be here. They would have died long ago. You are born of the food eaten by your parents. The rest is incidental. The body, even at birth, was the transformation of the food consumed by the parent. And after birth, it keeps on growing because of food. Annena jatani jivanti. So, and because I go on eating, I live. All these beings live because they go on, keep on eating. Understand? Seems to be quite simple. Why complicated? Adhyate adhyate bhutani tasmadannam tadutyate iti. Food is something which is eaten and which eats. It's a cycle. You eat food and later the food eats you. You eat food and later the food eats you. You come out of this earth, you dance on the earth for a little while and then get back into the earth. Lovely. Lovely dance. Then you go into meditation again. So I am just food. No. No. Other than that, there is something else. Anyantaratma pranamaya. Different from this body, there is the principle of life, life force. Tenaisha purnaha. Is that different in the sense that my shirt is different from the body? No. Every cell of that body is filled with life force. Aha. Correct. That's why the body is able to live. Good. So, there is body and there is life force. No. Something more. Tasmat bhaya tasmat pranamayat anyantaratma manomayaha tenaisha purnaha. Therefore, there is a thinking principle. There is a mind. I am able to think. Tenaisha purnaha. It seems to be different from the body, different from even this life force. But it fills the whole thing. So that in every cell of this body, there is some intelligence, some thinking principle. It is able to think. Every cell functions intelligently. Correct. So, I am going a little deeper. Then, there is another one. Vijnanamaya. Each one is designated Atma. Each one is designated Atma. The Atma in the form of body, the Atma in the form of the life force, the Atma in the form of mind. It is not as though somebody says, oh, no, all these are non-Atma, Atma is Atma, something else. Then you are creating it mentally. That's the problem. If you, right from the beginning, say that this body is not Atma, the mind is not Atma, that is not Atma, this is not Atma, then you are creating a thing called Atma. Unless you are a Yajnavalkya and you say even this is not Atma. Nothing that I can think of is Atma. Then you stop thinking. If you cannot do that, take everything as it comes. Without denying anything, without disregarding anything, and without assuming a thing called reality. Tena isa purna. Mind fills every cell of this being. Higher than that, there is another one. Vijnanamaya, which is a deep inner insight, wisdom, which is able even to observe the mind and to become aware of the states of the mind. Which is able to determine. Whereas mind thinks, there is something that determines it. And then he goes on, Anandamaya. Then he goes, deep, deep, deep into yourself, there is just an experience of deep peace, profound peace and bliss. There is that. Then what the Vedantins would call the five sheets, one after the other. And they give beautiful descriptions, like dress, you can peel off one after the other, or like the skin of the onion, you go on peeling off one after the other. But there's a problem here. Problem number one, the Upanishad is specific in saying tenaisha purnaha. Each one pervades the other. Life force pervades your body, entire body. The mind, the thinking principle pervades your entire body and the entire life force. How does one describe this? It is not as though these are all watertight compartments. You go from one compartment to another compartment. Then you suddenly realize, aha, this is a single truth seen from a different, experienced at different levels of consciousness. From the physical level of consciousness, there is the body. From the vital level of consciousness, there is the mind. There is the life force. From the psychological level of consciousness, there is the mind. From the level of insight, there is insight. Deeper within, where you and I, all of us are one, there is supreme bliss and peace. It is not as though one cancels the other. It is not as though one contradicts the other. But they are all complementary. They are one, not even complementary. They are complementary because they are one. And if this is not seen again, there is the other risk of our inventing all the, creating all these into little images. Eventually creating another image called Atma or God. Then you have another beautiful story in the same Upanishad. Here, a son approaches his father, the father being an enlightened man. His father, Adihi Bhagavo Brahmeti, please, teach me what Brahman is, God is. Teach me God. The old man says it's so simple. Yeah. Anandranam. Think of all this, the food that you eat, the air that you breathe, chakshu shrotam, your eyes, your ears, how they function. Mano vasanati, your mind. Contemplate all this. God is not somewhere. In the seventh heaven, yet you have to go looking for him. He's there everywhere. Whatever you do, try to figure out how am I here sitting and speaking. In that, there is a manifestation of God. See how you are able to see. In that, there is a manifestation of God. Why do you leave all these simple things and go up to some extraordinarily complicated affair? And of course, also remember, to find out through these, with the help of these, What is that that gave birth to all these, gave rise to all this? Etova imani bhutani jayante yena jagana jivanti. And having been created here, what is it that sustains all these beings? Yet prayanya visham visantiti. And once these beings leave this place, where do they go? That's also God. That is exactly the same thing. You take food, how is food transformed? Into the human body. Contemplate that. You think of sight. How am I able to see? What happens when I don't see? When the sight does not see anything. Is there a sight apart from that? How does it arise? How does it exist? And how does it subside? The same thing with mind. How does a thought arise? And how does it exist? And how does it come to an end? The whole process, the whole procession of the beginning, the middle and the end of all things. Consider this. Where are all these dances taking place? What is the stage on which all these are dancing? Consider that. Then you will get to know what God is. Good. This young man went and contemplated for some time and came back with his own discovery. Your idea. Food. We all arise because of food. We exist because of food. When we die into food. When we die, we are buried and then food grows out of that. So in your garden, in another 30 or 40 years, you will have tomatoes. With the Swami as the fertilizer. So remember that. Maybe the color will be slightly different. Brownish orange tomatoes. With this discovery, he came back to the father, who was also the guru. Father, I found out. What did you find out? Annam brahmedim vijanat. Food is God. Elsewhere in the same Upanishad, we are told that it is good to contemplate on God as food. Then you will never go hungry. This is the Upanishad. Why? Because you will respect your food. You won't ill-treat your food. You won't be disrespectful towards food. Throw it away. Treat food as God. Treat life force as God. Then you will use your energy carefully. That's beautiful. Treat each one as God. Then you will learn to respect every aspect of your being and every aspect of your life. This is an extraordinarily comprehensive treatment of the subject. So, when the boy comes back and says, Father, I have discovered that food is supreme. The master doesn't say yes, the master doesn't say no.
tapasah brahma vijnyasasva tapo brahmeti. There's only one way in which you can learn, you can understand what Brahman is, what God is. Because God is not an object of a description. God is not object of thought, and God is not the description. God is not the object of description. God is an experience. How do you get this experience? Tapasa brahma vijnyasasva. Go and practice meditation. Tapas in this particular context is represented by meditation, but one should not forget the real meaning of the word tapas. Tapas means burning. So that in other contexts it is interpreted as austerity, penance. And those people who don't like the oriental approach to reality, they translate it self-mortification. Get hold of a stick and keep beating yourself and things like that. Even in meditation, there should be this inner burning. If the inner burning is not there, there is no meditation. You are dull. You have set yourself to discover this truth, the answer to this question. What is the origin of all creatures? In what do they exist? And into what will they eventually dissolve? This is a tremendous question. And you are not provided with a library of books from which to glean the answer. You have to produce it yourself. And it is a matter of life and death, because you have got to discover this. And so, there is tremendous fire within you. This inquiry acts like a living flame. Tapasa brahma vijnyasasva. Not content with asking the boy to go and meditate, the master says, tapo brahmeti. That itself is meditation. That itself is God. Hey, what is that? Meditation itself is God. You have heard that before. God is not a word. God is not in the books or in the temples and churches and so on. God is not an object. God is the supreme subject, which has no object. God is the supreme subject which has no object, and therefore it doesn't even have to be called the subject. You call a subject because you are the object. Where there is only subject, only one, what would you call it? Subject or object? You call it meditation. Where there is only one, and therefore neither subject nor object, that only one is profound experience. Experience without an experiencer, observation without an observer, meditation without a subject or an object. Tapasa brahma vijignasasva tapo brahmeti satapo tapyata. And the young man goes away, enters into meditation again. Profound meditation. The master did not deny the statement that body is God. And so, the meditation begins with the body as God. When the meditator goes into a deeper plane, onto a deeper dimension, there is a throbbing of life force, and suddenly the boy realizes, it is true that body is body, annam food. Body came out of food, exists in food, because of food, and is returned to food. But the body itself arose because of life, because my parents were alive. If they had been dead bodies, there would be no conception. Right? And I am alive. And at the end of this, the whole thing is returned to the cosmic energy, life force. Here I found out. He comes back. Prano brahmeti vijanat. I found out that prana is God. This time again, the master doesn't argue at all. He has given the first push, indicated the direction, and indicated the most vital factor, the most vital spiritual practice, meditation. Tapasa brahma vijignasasya tapo brahmeti. He goes on repeating parrot-like. Go on, meditate. Why is it so? For a very simple reason. No doubt you have learned to meditate deeply and profoundly, but there is still a meditator, there is still an observer who is looking at other things. That is why you are taking out layer after layer and seeing through the body. And then suddenly you discover the life force. Okay, go ahead, see what else you are able to discover. After a little while he comes back. Hey, father, I found out. What? Mano brahme divya janat. Mind is God. It is not denied that body is God or life force is God, but one more factor is added to it. Mind is God. And the teacher neither says yes nor says no. Go on, meditate. Go on. Tapasa brahma vijnasasva tapo brahmeti. Because that itself is God. Go deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper into yourself. For this meditation itself is God. The young man goes back again into his meditation. Vijnanam brahmeti vijanat. I can see the mind. Oh. That means there is something within which is so sharp, so intelligent. Such subtle awareness,
that it is able to see even the mind.
Ah, good. This is God. He comes back with this discovery. And the father repeats the same thing. Tapasa brahma vijnyasasva tapo brahmeti satapo tapyata. Then he goes back once again into his meditation chamber. Then he doesn't come back. He doesn't come back. Anando brahmeti vijanat. Anandadhyevakalyibhimani bhutani jayante. This profound inner peace and inner bliss, in which there is neither an awareness of oneself or an object, but there is this much of an experience that this is the source of all. This supreme peace, this supreme bliss is the origin of all things. And whether or not the diverse creatures experience this peace and this bliss, all these beings live in this. Hey, how do you know? Because all of them return to this supreme peace and supreme bliss every day in sleep. All creatures. So that it is there, built in to every creature, into every creature. All these beings live in it. And this peace and this bliss is the origin, is the sustenance, and that is the end of all beings. There this boy is completely lost. What is there beyond that is described later on in the same Upanishad. Etamannamayamatmanam upasankramati, or etamannamayamatmanam upasankramya, etam pranamayamatmanam upasankramya, etam manomayamatmanam upasankramya, etam vijnanamayamatmanam upasankramya, etam anandamayamatmanam upasankramya. One by one, one by one, one by one, you go on crossing, going beyond, going beyond this, going beyond that. Then what do you do? Ha, woo, ha, woo. Then you don't know what it is all about. You say, hi, ha, ho. Why is it so, this, beyond that, there is no expression. Even this bliss is merely a very silly expression. That we think we have cleverly invented to describe the nature of God. But that describes nothing. We can say God is peace, God is bliss, God is light. But what idea of all these do we have? We have got only ideas of these. The ideas are not God. And the ideas do not approach anywhere near the reality or truth. What idea do you have of bliss? A glass of wine? Bliss. Or some sort of funny experience? That is not bliss. One who has never seen something, never experienced something, how will he recognize what it is like? You ask one of these multimillionaires nowadays, how are you? He says, I'm very healthy, marvelous. This fellow cannot even sleep. He needs two tranquilizers to go to sleep. What does he know of health? What does he know of peace of mind? What does he know of inner joy? He has never had anything. And in his case, the sleep, experience of an absence of anxiety, is considered great peace and great joy. When you ask someone what is health, he says, I have not been to the doctor for 2 years now, so I am healthy. That's not health. You may be too poor, you can't afford to go to the doctor. On the other hand, you go to a person like Swami Sivananda, he might have had any number of ailments from the doctor's point of view, and yet he was supremely healthy. So, we have very little idea of the truth. The truth being peace, the truth being bliss, the truth being light, the truth being God. And when we do not know any of the reality, we construct an image, which is the most dangerous thing. The Upanishads dismiss all that game and demand that you and I must take a fresh look at the whole thing. Get hold of anything. Get hold of any phenomenon. Never mind. Food, yes. Eyes, eyesight, yes. Hearing, yes. Anything. Anything you like. Thought. But go right to the root of it. What is its origin? How does it? Where does it exist? What is it made of? And what is its end? And when it comes to an end, what exists? Where does it originate? In what does it exist? And when it comes to an end, into what does it dissolve? What exists beyond that? If you get hold of anything and pursue this inquiry, you will hit the truth, and that will be your discovery through forever and ever.